Maybe 74, I don't know.
I got the date over there, I tell you what it was. Anyway, well, he was going up to San Francisco to see about some goods, and he stopped at Visalia, California. There was a doctor there that he came acquainted with. The doctor always told him to stop it and come by. And he met my mother there, who came out to California when an uncle of hers told her that they needed school teachers. He was one of the men out there in the gold rush. Mm-hmm. She came over on one of the first trips made by the Central Pacific, Union Pacific Railroad. And she told me that buffalo herds crossed the track twice. They had to stop the train.
She came from the East California?
She came. She was a native of Arkansas.
Uh-huh.
And she'd been to school in Memphis, and she was a school teacher, you see.
What was her name, do you remember?
Sally Davis Hayden.
Holly Davis?
Sally
Davis.
Sally Davis Hayden. Mm-hmm. That's her name. Sally Davis was her maiden name.
And she went from Arkansas to California on one of the first Union Pacific trains, was it?
Yes, one of the very early trains.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, so early that there were still herds of buffalo that they had to stop the train, let them go across the track. She told me that occurred twice on the way across the plains. Well, she taught school at it, and she was teaching in Visalia when my father stopped there, and he met her.
Mm-hmm.
And after a couple of years, he persuaded her to marry, and they were married in 1876. And the Southern Pacific Railroad was completed then from San Francisco south to Los Angeles and out about Colton or San Bernardino, and they had to take a stage and come across from there, and then these teams met him up at Wickenburg. She lived there. That's where I was born the following year.
Mm-hmm. Well, then they came back to this place where he was building the mill.
Yes.
Is that what they called Hayden's Ferry?
Yes, he had the mill, and he also had a ferry boat across the river.
Mm-hmm.
See, and the river was up by, it was a cable like this, you know, and I've ridden the old boat. You let it down this way, and push it over there,
and
let it down the other way, and push it back.
It would stay on the cable going across.
Stay on the cable, but you just put the boat at an angle, and the current pushed it across.
I see. Mm-hmm.
See, or hold a team of horses,
mm-hmm.
wagons, and so on, so they could take freight wagons and things like that across.
But the force of the stream would take it across.
Yes, that's right. So that's where I was born. Well, now it's up to about the time of my birth that I've been working on what he did, and I let you look that over.
Yeah, okay.
It didn't complete it.
That was in 77, was it, or 78 that you were born?
I was born in 1877,
mm-hmm.
which makes me 84 years old now.
Mm-hmm. Well, what was Hayden's Ferry like at that time? It was just the mill
and the store.
And then the wide open spaces there.
Yeah, well then, see, he filed on the quarter section of land where they obtained a patent for the mm-hmm. land where they was, and some other people nearby, and he finally acquired the land south of it.
Was that, were they homestead sites in those days?
Oh, no, they had what they call a preemption law.
Mm-hmm.
I think you had to make certain improvements and then you get a patent.
I see.
Very
mm-hmm.
easy to get a patent. So he patented this 160 acres, part of it in the river and part of it in the town,
mm-hmm.
and then acquired other land there. So for the town of Tempe and the state university and all that, he owned all that area
mm-hmm.
at the time.
When did they change it to, when did they call it Tempe? That was a good deal later on, I guess.
Well, the man by the name of Darrell Duppa, who was either a graduate of Oxford or Cambridge. He was a British remittance man. They sent him money over now and then. England. A very brilliant fellow.
What was his last name?
Duppa.
D-U-P-P-A?
Yeah. Darrell Duppa.
Mm-hmm.
Darrell St. Clair and he never.
Oh, is that so?
Yeah. Pepper was a very brilliant fellow, but he was an awful drinker. When he get his revenge, he'd get all big drunk and so on, mm-hmm. things like that. But he suggested the name of Phoenix because of the Indian ruins around there, and he said it would rise from the ashes of the older spirit civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Tempe country, he said it was a beautiful country, like the Vale of Tempe between Mount Ossa and Mount Olympus in Greece, where mm-hmm. the gods came down to have their little parties once in a while. That's Tempe Canal.
He suggested both names, huh?
Huh?
He suggested both
names.
Names,
yes. Mm-hmm. Well, they called it the Tempe Canal and the Tempe Country, and somebody suggested that I'd be better named the town. My father said, yes, it won't take so much ink to write it as Hayden's Ferry.
How far out of Phoenix is Tempe?
9 miles.
I've been to Phoenix, but I don't think I ever saw Tempe.
Well, Tempe is just 9 miles east and across the river.
Mm-hmm.
I know that we'd have a good team of trotters that'd take an hour when I was a boy to drive to Phoenix, over, mm-hmm. up and down over the hills and around there.
Well, how did you get to school out there in the wide open spaces?
Well, by the time I got old enough to get a school, of course my mother was a school teacher.
Oh, that's right.
And she was very much interested in establishing schools and in getting good teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to a little old one-room adobe schoolhouse first as a small boy.
Mm-hmm.
And then graduated, got out of the public school, and then in the meantime, they established the Arizona Territorial Normal School there.
Mm-hmm.
The same legislature that established the University of Arizona established this normal school, which ultimately became the college in this, now the state university,
mm-hmm.
the second state university, about 11,000 students.
Mm-hmm.
And I graduated at the normal school, and then my father heard about Stanford University, that they had elective courses. He never had a use for Latin or Greek.
Mm-hmm.
That was a waste of time and so on. And I went up there with what credits I had,
mm-hmm.
and you had to have 12 credits to enter. I think I had 8.
Mm-hmm.
And so they said, you can enter, but you have to make every hour every semester or you have to leave.
Mm-hmm.
So I picked courses that weren't particularly tough. I didn't take any Greek or Latin or mathematics, mm-hmm. thing like that. I took history and economics and English, things that outside kind
mm-hmm.
But my chief ambition was to develop into a man. I'd always been a spindling boy. And
mm-hmm.
I went to the gym there, I weighed 132 pounds. I went on the track and didn't do much good there, but played football.
Mm-hmm.
And when I left there, I weighed over 180 pounds, all muscle.
Is that so?
I played center.
I was in, how many years were you there?
4 years.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't complete 4 years because I went home for Christmas and my father died in January. And I had to take over the business.
What year did you go to Stanford, Jeff? Did you
96.
Start? 96.
I would be in the class of 1900, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But I went to December 99,
mm-hmm.
and then I went home. My father passed away, and I had to take charge of the business. We had the flour mill.
The last year you were there. Hmm?
Yeah.
How about the football? Was it much different then than it is now?
Oh, it was just guards back, tackles back, buck the line. There was no forward pass.
No.
Buck the line or run the ends.
Just the biggest, heaviest man knocked the other one down, I suppose.
That's about right.
Did they have 11 men on? Did they have 11 men on the side?
Yeah, same as they do now. They had either center, guards, tackle, ends, and fullbacks.
What did you play? I played
center.
Center.
I found out that the way to get along there is to grab legs and let them fall on top of you.
That's still a good way, I guess.
Yeah. That is, if you get in a pile, you
that'll
get a broken up.
Did they play rival colleges up and down the
No, the only big game we had was the University of California. They said, no, nothing but railroad. No, you couldn't travel that distance. Mm-hmm. And there were other colleges far away.
Yeah.
So we would play games with the two athletic clubs in San Francisco, mm-hmm. the Reliance and the Olympic Club. 1 week we'd play the Olympics, and the next week we'd play the Reliance, and the University of California work it the other way, you see.
Where are these in San Francisco?
We play in San Francisco. Well, there was enough interest in the game, you see, that mm-hmm. they could charge admission. And the clubs could get the...
They didn't have any big stadiums, of course, like they had later.
No, they had fairly decent fields mm-hmm. and grandstand and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you had showers where you could...
Yeah. Did you play any other sports at Stanford?
And well, I tried out for the track, but my leg was short. I went. I was a little short-legged. I'm 5'11", but from the waist up, I got plenty of height, but I haven't from the...
Legs are short, huh?
A little short. So I wasn't good on the track. You got to be a long, spindle-legged fellow.
Yeah.
Yeah. A good... hurdler or racer.
Well, then you came back when your father died that last year at college. You came back to...
I came back.
To take charge of the...
the billing and mercantile business.
Mm-hmm.
Well, times were tough and I had a hell of a time, but I made up my mind I was no merchant or trader like he was. And so I consolidated the mercantile business. And then I had an opportunity to rent the mill at a good figure, and so mm-hmm. I did that, and I was going to run for sheriff, but the old head people said that I should.
You didn't care for business very much,
no,
I think.
No, I didn't. I decided, you see, to be a merchant, you've got to know how to buy.
Yeah.
If you don't buy right, you can't
make anything. You don't make anything.
That was one handicap. The other one was the credit business.
Mm-hmm.
See, you had to trust a farmer for a whole year. Well, if he got a good crop, he'd pay.
Yeah.
If he didn't, why?
Mm-hmm.
What? All that.
It was quite a gamble, huh?
It was a gamble, and I just figured I wasn't any good for that business, and I better get out. So, as I say, I figured I'd be a sheriff. They just, old head said, you elect the county treasurer for a term because we want Sam Stout. He defeated the Republican. He should be another term. The next mm-hmm. time it'll be for you, and they were. So my first real political experience was to go to the Democratic National Convention. I was elected a delegate to it in 1904 in St. Louis. And they nominated...
Brian? Was it Brian?
No, Parker.
Parker, oh yeah.
And Parker didn't get anywhere because he was mm-hmm. in the gold standard, you remember.
Oh yeah. Well, did the parties permit the territories to send delegates in those?
Oh yes, the territories were always just like they are now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, a big delegation, I think there were four or five of us, but just enough to represent it.
Mm-hmm.
I was one of them. Smart old lawyer down in Yuma can blew smoke on me. He said, I'll define him, man, I'll be chairman. What do you want to be? He was on the platform committee.
Yeah.
But I didn't know it enough to know that. Well, he got sick one day. I remember the St. Louis paper said, man, Yuma, stricken with the heat. And so I did get in on one session. Mm-hmm. I saw W.J. Bryan with his coat off and his shirt sleeves.
In the platform committee?
Platform. David B. Hill, a lot of those old time characters.
Brian was in there too, wasn't he?
Yeah, Brian was there.
Mm-hmm.
I got a chance to see them.
Mm-hmm.
This old senator from, powerful senator from Virginia.
Was gold versus silver the big question at that convention?
Yes, that was it. Well, they had a kind of a namby-pamby platform, and Parker just wrote a letter he used for the gold standard.
Mm-hmm.
He lost the election right there.
Yeah. I read a clipping down at the down at the Star, which said that as a boy you read I don't know how many volumes of Ridpath's History. Was that
my volume? My father. I was always a great reader. My father always bought good books, and I did that. There was a Ridpath's History of the World. I read it.
That was while you were in grade school and normal school, I guess.
Yes, well, when I was 14, 15 years old. I think I'd probably... He always subscribed to good magazines, and he had quite a library of books. He was a great reader himself. He had a way of always getting a book when he was on his travels to see whether he'd have a long way to go in an ambulance. Take a new book along with him and read it, you see. And I remember an old man named Chalk told me that my father was reading Draper's Intellectual Development of Europe. That was out of a new book in those days. And my father, the driver in the ambulance, old Chalk was following along behind on a horse riding, I think they were coming from Yuma to Tucson. So. And they were down the Santa Cruz River bottom. He saw some movement in the arrow weeds there. So he thought, well, there might be an Apache in there. He took a shot at it. And there was a big disturbance in there then. So he came in town. He told the Mexicans in town that he thought maybe he'd got an Indian.
Yeah.
And they went out there, and it wasn't a dead Indian. And they cut his head off and put it on a pole and brought it into town. The Apaches, you see, it was Tucson was a walled town then.
It was?
Yes, hell, the Apaches were awful bad. They put a building wall around it on a small part of it. Well, then it expanded, my father's store and other things were outside of it.
Well, this was before he went up to the Salt River, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, long before. But I remember that particular title, and we had the book on him when I was a boy.
Yeah, is that, so I think I read somewhere that that house you were born in is still standing out there, isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, it is. What he did, he came over and he built the mill, and they made out a street called Mill Avenue now. It's the main street in Tempe. Then across the street is over 100 feet wide there, about 100 feet wide, I think. And he built a store, and then he built adjoining the store, adobe rooms where he lived. And that became quite a place. He went up to the corner and down, and then it was a patio on the inside. Back of that was a barn, and back of that was a big grain warehouse. So on that there was places where the teams could be taken care of, and they hauled and freight from there.
Well, when you were going to school and growing up around there, you had to stay pretty close to home, I suppose, on account of the Indians, didn't you?
Well, they had, by the time I got, all I know about the Apache business was seeing signal fires on the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
See? And I remember, I got a memory that when they captured Geronimo.
Oh, is that so?
Yes, I can remember that. And then I remember that General Miles came out and they gave him a sword to Toussaint, and then they came to Phoenix and they had some celebration because he captured Geronimo. I remember that. But what I knew about the thing was that we had a big place there, and there was always something to eat. There was always room for a guest, and the old timers would come, you see, and he, friends of his that he knew in Tucson, or you know, they'd stop overnight.
Yeah,
sure. I'd sit down there and listen to them talk, and they kicked me and made me go to bed. But that way I heard a lot of things when I was growing up about the pioneer conditions.
Is that still running, do you suppose?
Yeah.
What do you suppose? What got you first interested in politics, Senator? What
turned
your mind in that direction?
I just decided that sheriff's office was paid off, well paid fees, mostly.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that I wanted to be sheriff. Well, I said, I started out that way, and they told me to be the county treasurer. Well, I took that office.
Mm-hmm.
We paid in gold then, in those days.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't see so many greenbacks out there. Nobody liked greenbacks. And I remember when I was, that year, a man named John Phillips, who after became governor of Arizona, a Republican, was elected probate judge, and he was paid quarterly. He got $200 a month. And I shoved out $600 worth of $20 gold pieces under the behind the cage.
Yeah.
And he stood up and looked at us and said, "Is that all my money?" I said, "Yes, that's the most money I've had in my life." But we paid gold.
That's when you were county treasurer.
County treasurer. Mm-hmm. Well, then, 2 years after that, I was elected sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And I served that term.
See, what year was that, when you were elected sheriff?
Well, I was elected 94, treasurer, 96, sheriff, and not director there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that.
And then re-elected 98, and then, see, that would make me 1910. Well, 1910, they had passed a bill off to admit the state of our territory of Arizona, Senate,
mm-hmm.
and that bill carried everybody over.
Oh, yeah.
See?
Mm-hmm.
So altogether, I served
4 years.
Mm-hmm. I served more than four.
You served until you came to Congress. You must have served.
What I had to do was stay there
until they. That would be.
In other words, they just carried over all the county officials.
Until the state was organized.
Anticipating statehood, and then they'd have a state mm-hmm. constitution to operate under.
I was a delegate at the Democratic National Convention in 1994, elected treasurer of Maricopa County in 1994, sheriff in 1996, again in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Then married Ms. Hayden at the Bishop of Sarah's Road State, elected 62nd Congress, at the 7th succeeding Congress, February 19, 1912. See, the state. The elections were, primary election first, was held in
1911. Mm-hmm.
And
that was in November.
November or somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Then they, about a month afterwards, they had the primary itself.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I won the nomination, and I won the election. And that was early November, December 1912. Then you had to wait until they adopted the Constitution.
Well, that was in 11, wasn't it, when you were
1911.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm getting at is,
yeah. They
had to wait until they adopted the Constitution, and the Constitution was approved by President Taft.
Mm-hmm.
Taft objected.
Taft vetoed it once, didn't he?
He objected to the recall of judges.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Had to meet again and take that out, and then he approved it.
Yeah.
That delayed the admission. Arizona and New Mexico wanted to come in at the same time until February 14, 1912.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had to stay there to turn over my office, and I had to stay there in order to get a certificate of election from the new Secretary of State. And I got on the train, came back here.
So you were really sheriff about 6 years all together. You stayed in sheriff until you came to the House, didn't you?
Well, from January.
Well, 5 years, anyhow.
In January 1907, wouldn't it?
It would be five years.
It was between 5 and 6 years.
A little over 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
From January to February, over 5 years. January to February 14th.
Well, were you sheriff of what is now Phoenix, what is now the whole city of Phoenix?
Maricopa County.
Mm-hmm.
Maricopa County is about as big as the state of Connecticut.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Was it a very rugged job in those days?
No, I always joked about it. Said, wanted anybody to call him up on the telephone.
Is that so?
I didn't have any real trouble. The only we just went on, did our business, and had no trouble because we didn't get rough with anybody. I had a deputy that was always wanting to pull in, and I remember one fellow was sane one time, riding around town, distributing some kind of red leaflets about money wire. Well, went down there, and Wayne and I know Wayne wanted to get right up and grab him, and I said, "Hell, he's got that rifle there." Well, let's talk him out of it. Well, I talked to him a while and told him that I'm sure that he'd get some justice if he'd come down to the courthouse. And I rode down there and I got him to get inside and go to the court, and he got his gun off him.
You believed in doing it the easy way, the easiest way.
It'd be diplomatic.
Yeah, sure.
No use bullet in and making trouble.
Do you ever look at these westerns on television nowadays, son?
Yes, they're terribly exaggerated.
That's what I figured.
I remember arresting a horse thief one time, a notorious horse thief he was. Got a description of him. Well, heard of his own saloon.
Mm-hmm.
He was standing at the bar, just pulled a gun in his back, told him to stick up his hand, and then took his gun away from him, and that's all there was to it. You know.
You didn't break up all the furniture in the place the way they do on television.
Thing like that, you know. You could make an arrest without
sure.
grabbing somebody or beating them up.
Yeah.
You talk about it.
Did they organize posses much in your time?
No.
As sheriff?
Didn't have. Mm-hmm. I had very good deputies, both Wayne Davis and my successor, and old Jeff Adams. They were great trailers. Lord God, they could get on a horse and just take tracks and follow anywhere. I had a judge out there from Maine named Kent. He was the son of the governor Kent, who was the first Republican governor elected in the United States. And there was the old saying, Maine went hell bent for Governor Kent. His son,
and
the judge, he didn't believe in tracks. I don't know why the hell he wouldn't. I think they're the best kind of proof that you can get.
Uh-huh.
You get a sole shoe and get an imprint of it and find the shoe on the man. The man was there.
Sure.
Ain't no doubt about it.
Yeah, sure.
Well, these were good trackers. Wayne one time when they said somebody stole a pistol at a sheep camp. He went out there and picked the man's track from another sheep camp about 7 or 8 miles away and opened up his black throat. There was a pistol.
There he was. By following his foot track.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm.
All he had to do.
I guess the weather had something to do with that. If it rained in between.
Well, it didn't rain much.
Mm-hmm. That's one of your troubles down there. It never did rain enough, did it?
Well, it rained 6 inches a year there as compared to 48 years.
Is that so? Were any of these characters that they have on these television shows now, some of those were real?
Well, that tombstone business, of course, they've exaggerated, but
mm-hmm.
I didn't know a damn thing about that. I know that when I was coming along, a boy, why, tombstone busted, you see, the price of silver went down. A good many people came over, and...
Is tombstone further north than...
No, tombstone was down in the south, east corner of the
state. Southeast. Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people came over there. You never knew Figgis, but he was born in Tombstone, but he was a very good friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And I helped him to get overseas. He was a very fine stenographer. He was in Pershing's headquarters over there.
Mm-hmm.
There are different families like that that moved from Tombstone into Phoenix, came into that area. Heard a lot of talk about Tombstone, but I never saw them. I went there with my father before the bust. That's right.
Was that a mining center? Is that why it got such a reputation? Is that where they were?
They discovered this very rich silver deposit there.
Mm-hmm.
And he went down there on some business when I was a boy and took me along.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Benson. And got on an old Deadwood stagecoach and rode us up and down, I remember. And then there was a mine there they called the Contention Mine, I suppose. And we got in it, when we go down the shaft, in fact, that's the first time I was in the mine.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of scared me when the bottom dropped out of it. They had a way of just letting the damn thing go and then catching it up before it hit the bottom.
Before you hit the bottom.
Especially if they had a greenhorn in there, huh?
Yeah. But I was so small. I have a vague recollection of Tombstone.
Mm-hmm.
But riding the stage and going down the mine shaft were the biggest things that I saw.
What were most of the cases you'd have as sheriff?
Certain cases and all kinds of fever and took care of the insane and things like that. I had a devil named Olea, who of course he came from a very prominent family in Sonora, where we were educated in Mexico, and talked with him one evening. A woman came in, said that was going to kill her. She was scared.
And, her husband was going to kill her?
Yeah. He threatened to kill her, so on. Scared. And she said, he's the man that killed that man you found dead down there by the railroad tracks. I said, how do you know? Well, he came home and told me he did it, and he took my sewing machine on and cleaned out his revolver. I said, you married to him? He said, no, she's living with him, so she could be a witness.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I got him.
Yeah. He was the right one?
He was the right one. We persecuted him.
Yeah.
Sent him to penitentiary.
There was a state prison in Yuma then, or had they set it up at Florence?
No, I had to take prisoners to Yuma.
All the way over to Yuma.
We'd have a term of courts at home, then get 3-4 time and take them down there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, by 1906, was Phoenix a pretty good settlement by then?
Oh,
a number of people?
I don't remember what the 1910 census of Phoenix would show. You could find out.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's grown by leaps and bounds in
the last
30 years or so, I guess.
Yeah. It's a comparatively small town, but it was a thriving kind of community in those days.
Was it a transfer point for people going through, or did you have any?
It was a stub end of two lines, a railroad. See?
Mm-hmm.
It's about 40 miles down to the Southern Pacific. It's much longer, over 100 miles up to Santa Fe.
Uh-huh.
And the Southern Pacific first built a railroad in a place called Maricopa Junction, and across the Gila River, and then a bridge across the Salt River right near where I was born, goes into Phoenix. And the other road came down from the north, and it came in later too, so that it had railroad connections, but you had to go out and stub line each way.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I wondered about, Senator, it might be of interest to Jerry, what was the relative strength of the Republicans and the Democrats, and what did, in general, did the two, what was the difference between the two parties out there
at
the time you first got into the political sector?
Between Arizona and New Mexico was that the Confederates, defeated Confederate soldiers that lost out, drifted west, and a lot of them settled in that area, and that was the backbone of the democracy of the area.
Mm-hmm.
In both New Mexico and Arizona?
No, in Arizona.
In Arizona.
In New Mexico, they had this. New Mexico was loyal to the Union, that is around Santa Fe and up that area, and they were Republican. Well, they had more people than we had, you see.
Mm-hmm.
The statehood fight that we had for all those years before we got in, Oklahoma and Indian Territory we consolidated into one state. Everybody knew it would be a Democratic state.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea was then to consolidate Arizona and New Mexico, although Arizona had been cut off from New Mexico when President Lincoln was president. Made a separate territory.
Oh, Lincoln did?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That was in 61.
Mm-hmm.
Why, they, that's where this centennial comes in, you see.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100 years since Arizona was made it.
Separate territory.
In Lincoln's administration. Well, if they could put Arizona and Mexico together, the Republican majority in Mexico would overcome the Democratic majority in Arizona.
They wanted one state out of the two territories, huh?
Well, sure, but mm-hmm. then they would get two Republican senators.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not a balance of two that were from Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
See, to mm-hmm. even the thing up. And that's, we had this about three sessions, three different Congress, we had this fight here, and the ability of a few senators in the Senate to take time to talk, freedom of debate, the Senate
yeah.
all kept Arizona from being consolidated.
Mm-hmm.
They just said, you just can't do that to those people, and they talked every time they tried to do it, and finally they gave way and gave us the right for a separate vote.
Mm-hmm.
Each state was to vote,
mm-hmm.
and if both of them, each territory was to vote, if both of them voted for a joint state, all right.
Yeah.
Either
yeah.
one of them voted no, well, New Mexico
yeah,
voted
choice.
For joint statehood. But we voted no, and so that's how we could be admitted.
Well, these Southerners who came out there after the war and settled in Arizona, they would be mostly Democrats.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm.
That's the backbone was.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. An old man named Long was the superintendent of public instruction by appointment. The president would appoint a public governor.
Yeah.
And then he had his staff and so on. And this one, old man Long was on the governor's staff that way. And somebody said to him one election day, the old man would vote Republican ticket, and then he'd kind of lonesome and take a few drinks. And somebody said, Long, how do you account for so many Democrats in Arizona? Old man stirred up and says, the vigilance of peace officers in Texas.
In Texas? Didn't give Arizona any credit.
Well, it meant that they were driven out of Texas.
Oh, I know.
Character, that was the way he put it.
Well, that's why it was so
they had to get out of Texas.
In other words, they're a bunch of outlaws.
The peace officers know they would get them. Bill Barnum was a great talker. He introduced Gore out home one time and made a very flowery speech at the big meeting about how he knew Gore in Oklahoma and what a great senator he was and so on. And
was this the blind senator from Oklahoma? Or you
blind senator.
Yeah.
And Gore got up and said, I'm very grateful to Billy Barnum for his introduction, he said. Everybody said if he'd just stayed in Oklahoma, the grand jury would have cleared him.
That concluded the pertinent portion of the interview conducted on October the 9th, 1961. And now we'll go right on to the next day, October 10th, the same parties and also in the Senator's Washington office.
All at Maricopa and rode the train out to the Gila River, which is about 7 or 8 miles from Maricopa Junction. And they pulled a bell cord and got off. In the meantime, they just went through, robbed everybody on the train.
Oh, like the conductor taking up tickets, huh?
Yeah, just like that. There were two boys, brothers named Woodson, Oklahoma, and they decided to rob a train, so they rented two horses at the livery stable in Phoenix, drove over and tied them in the brush in the river bottom.
That's where they were going to get off.
And then when they walked over to Maricopa, got on the train, and when they got to the bridge, they pulled the stop cord, and the engine stopped, and they got off. And then took their horses. Yeah, that was the plan.
Uh-huh.
Well, as I say, the train came in about sundown, a little later, and they told me about it. I said, well, if you'll give us a stop car, we'll put the horses in there and
over there and get on the trail in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
So they did that. Had an engine haul us over. I sent word to the Team Indian Reservation and asked for some Indian police, Pimas, Maricopas, and asked them to have them over there in the morning, mounted. So we followed and used them for trackers. We took our horses off and go along with the Indian police. That way. During the night, John Nelson was sheriff of Pima County. Came in on the train and did a customs man to the border customs man. And so he wanted to go. Well, I said, "You give John my horse, let him ride that." The sheriff of Pima County. We were going down into his county the way this trail followed. And the man named McCarthy had this African Jackrabbit car there in Maricopa. So he said, we'll have one of the Indians, we'll arrange to have one of the Indian scouts come back, you see. When the police come back and tell us which way the thing was going, which way the trail was, then we could take the car and go after. Well, they came in and reported that the, if you remember, the Bennett Maricopa, there was a flat top mountain right south of the junction.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that they had gone around the end of that mountain and turned around there. So, or it looked like they were going to go that way. So we went about halfway up to Casa Grande and then tuck out across the lake. Well, I had my rifle that I used at Camp Perry, and very dependable gun. So we got anywhere near them, all these two bits. Well, it took a long time for them to get the trail and stay on it and find out where they were going, and then send the Indian back. So about noon, I think we left. It must have been long about 2 o'clock when I met the posse coming back. The horsemen. They said their horses were out of water. They hadn't had any this morning. They were going to a little place called Copperburg and get some water.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I said, "How about tracks?" Well, they said, "They're so fresh, the Indians don't step in front anymore." So down this road. Well, I said, "We go down the road and in the car, you go on." And so the two train robbers, they never thought about being pursued by automobiles.
Mm-hmm.
They were out of water.
Yeah.
They tied their horses when they heard the car coming and disarmed themselves, apparently, and came out to ask for water. Well, we just hopped out of the car and covered them.
Yeah.
I know Carter was kind of nervous. Didn't put up his hand, but he'd taken a .32 pistol from one of the passengers he had in his hands pocket. But I think he put him up, which he did. So we got out and disarmed him and handcuffed him. Then fired some shots in the air, and the horsemen, having gone so far, wanted to hear it, they all came back up. So, one of my deputies, old fellow named Bill Wilson, was an old peace officer at Tombstone, and I told Bill I was kind of tired, and I said, "You ride the car, and I'll take the horse." I thought we did and went over to Copperburg, and the damn automobile broke down. So I had to get an Indian, a team of horses, and a little wagon with no bed on it, put the prisoners on their handcuffs. And right away, we got to Casa Grande away in the night. I was damn tired. I hadn't slept the night before, but I said, "Hardly any, as a matter of fact." Well, that night, I would sleep on a billiard table and I'd swim as a gardener.
Did the Indians, the police, always work with you on pretty regularly?
No trouble. The Indian police were very good.
Were they on a reservation there?
Yes, on every Indian reservation they have Indian police.
Oh, yeah.
But they pay law and order.
Mm-hmm. And you could call on them anytime you
Yes, but I know they have a good meeting.
Well, I thought that was an interesting case. I just wanted to get a little more detail on it.
The rest of the story was that when we landed in Casa Grande, where, of course, they telegraphed into Phoenix that we had them, and they were there, and they were going to come in on the train. And when the train came along early in the morning, we got into Phoenix just a little after sunup. What I wanted to do was put them in the jail, slam the door, and go on and get some sleep. So I had this rifle in my hand, and other men with me, of course, took the prisoner up and did that. Well, I got some sleep. I come down that afternoon. I met the old fella that I knew very well down by the courthouse. He said, "Carl, I'd rather be you with my rifle in my hand, bringing in the train robber, than be president of the United States." he thought it was a great thing.
Did they have much of the stuff with them that had gotten off the passage?
Yeah, well, they took watches and took
wallets and what?
Yeah, things like that. Mm-hmm. And they disarmed just covered a deputy sheriff who had a prisoner who was bringing to the penitentiary. They just covered him and took his gun away from him.
Oh, he was on the train.
See, they came up from behind. They started in where they walked behind each bastard.
Yeah.
And with their guns.
It was easy to do.
Give me everything you got. They took watches and money.
They didn't turn his prisoner loose, though, huh?
Huh?
They didn't turn this prisoner loose.
No, the train was moving, and he went on in, and he was going to make a good to jump off the train. And of course, the guard could hold him anyhow. And he was handcuffed, the prisoner was. But the guard had his gun at his side, and they just covered him to get away from him.
The number two session, session of August the 10th, 1961, continues on the flip of this tape. There was an interruption here, a telephone call the senator had to take, so the continuity may be broken a little.